Hello, what have we here?
Hey everyone, welcome back to Resistance Radio. It's episode 57. Hope you all enjoyed last week's show, because this week it's all about Thrawn, the novel, the character. Mithran Nerudu. I'm so excited for this episode. As always, I'm Mikey B, joined by my co-host, Danya. Hey, Danya.
Hey, everyone.
And we also have Evan from the JodoCast joining us. Hey, Evan.
Hey, everybody. What's going on?
Not a lot. Very excited to be here. Anyway, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can get a hold of us on Twitter at our radio podcast. Leave a comment on our Facebook. Send us an email through our website, resistanceradio.net. Or leave a comment on this post when it goes up on hypeable.com. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/resistanceradio. With over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player, get the latest Star Wars audiobook for free, including the Thrawn book that we're going to talk about. So, we also launched our Patreon, which I'm kind of excited about. So if you are here with us today, welcome. Hi, Brack. Also, you can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/resistanceradiopodcast. Also, coming up, I think it's Saturday, right, Danya? We are doing our first live showing of our, Phantom Menace?
Yes. Yeah, Phantom Menace 1.
Menace 1. So we're going to be watching Phantom Menace. You're going to hear me go, yippee, and Wizard, along with Anakin Skywalker. Oh, come on. Who doesn't want audio commentary on the episode 1 Phantom Menace? It's going to be exciting. You get to join us in the chat room. You can talk to us while we talk. And depending on what you have to say, maybe we'll bring you in and your voice could be on the commentary. Who knows? But with joining Patreon, you get some access to some really cool perks like our Discord chat, where you get to hear Danya talk all about hockey.
Look, the Stanley Cup playoffs are happening right now and I'm very stressed. I get to vent about it once a week prior to recording, so let me have my moment.
You can join us live in the recording studio so you hear all the wonderful mistakes that we make that we don't get to edit out. I try to edit most of them out. You'll be able to join us for our movie nights, like we have Phantom Menace coming up on Saturday, and our After Dark episodes, which will be starting up next month. If you can't afford Patreon, it's okay. We do have t-shirts and buttons available on our website also. Or we even have a tier where you can join Patreon and get a free t-shirt from that too. So that's kind of cool. Moving on to the news. We don't have that much news this week just because we got all the big news, a couple weeks ago at Celebration. I don't think they want to bombard us with nonstop news, but we got some big news here. Star Wars Episode 9, not The Last Jedi, but the movie after that, has a release date of May 24th, 2019. Danya, I know you have some very strong feelings about this. What do you guys think about this? We're moving from our December release dates to a May release date. What do you guys think?
Stop ruining Christmas.
Now, you guys got to understand, Danya is being very relaxed right now. She kind of threw a Kylo Ren-style temper tantrum about it earlier. I even had to send the picture because I understand. Ruining the traditions.
It's mostly because it's really nice to have it in December at Christmas time because it's a really nice build up to me going home, and also it means that I get to see it with my dad, whereas dropping it now in May instead is difficult for me because I probably won't go home at that point, and that means I won't see it with my dad now, which is going to be really weird.
You say you probably won't go home, but if it's a tradition, wouldn't you go home to keep that tradition going?
No, so the way that it usually works is I go to see the midnight release with my friend Scott, who was on the Rogue One episode, and his fiance Amy, and sometimes her brother comes along as well. So we all go and see it on the midnight release together. And that's usually the week or week and a half before I go home for Christmas to my family. And then what I do then is when I am back at home for Christmas, me and my dad go and see it together. But if it's in May, it's really difficult because I can't, if I take two lots of holiday in May, I won't I will have less holiday days, which means I can't take them over Christmas.
Well, but there's no tradition in Christmas then, so it wouldn't matter.
Yeah. My point being, Mikey, is that I won't be able to take the time off from work to go and do it.
Okay.
That's my point.
Now, we've had a comment in the chat room, and I will say, May is a tradition. You know, the original trilogy was historically released during that time. Even the prequels were released during that same time frame. And even The Force Awakens was originally slated for a May release, and then it got pushed back. I will say, I'm not surprised with them announcing a May release date, because they've announced that for both The Last Jedi and Force Awakens, and then they both got pushed back. I was reading an article a couple months ago, and I double-checked to make sure I was right. Avatar 2 was originally slated for a December 20th release date, 2019. And the article was actually asking, is Disney going to go ahead and put Star Wars there to go head-to-head with Avatar? You know, that, you know, is financially, does that make sense or not? And I was like, oh, I wonder what they'll do. I'm sure they'll move one of them. And sure enough, they announced this to be May. But I have a feeling now that Avatar has actually just this week announced that they're pushing back to 2020 for Avatar 2, that we might see episode 9, even though they just announced the May date, you know, in a month or so, get pushed back to December. Would you guys be surprised if that happened?
I actually wouldn't be shocked at all, because both The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi were originally given slots in the release schedule for May, and then were pushed to December, both of them. So the fact that episode 9 could follow suit would be the same. I'm rather fond of the December release date now, just because it's fairly convenient for me, and it also gets me really hyped up for the end of the year as well.
I've been enjoying it a lot too, actually, because I mean, the last few years, like you said, that's kind of been our Christmas movie. You know, back from 2001, 2003, our Christmas movies, Lord of the Rings. There you go.
Yeah.
I know. And I remember that. That was my favorite time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's just so convenient, because, like, a lot of my friends have more time off, so we go and see it together, and then family has time off, so we go and see it together, and it just all works out neatly. Whereas it moving back to May, it basically just throws a spanner into the works for me, because it means that my holiday time is really awkwardly planned, and I probably won't be... It splits my holiday time awkwardly, which means that maybe a midnight release might not be possible, and it's just... it's really sad.
Okay, I'll buy that. Now, during this press release, we also got news of an Indiana Jones film. I know this is not an Indiana Jones podcast, but it's Lucasfilm, and Harrison Ford is going to be in the new Indiana Jones film set for release July 10th, 2020.
Well, we already knew there was an Indiana Jones film
coming, but we didn't know it was going to be when it was going to be released.
Or that he'd be in it.
They said it.
Yeah, they said that was part of his contract for Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Is that he would do. Now, I didn't know if he was going to be in it or just make a cameo, but...
Right, because there was some pretty strong rumors about other people stepping into those shoes.
Mm-hmm. Like a young Indiana Jones movie?
Hey, if they had gotten... now I can't think of his name. From Young Indy and Boondock Saints, he should have been playing Indiana Jones more recently. He was great. Sean Patrick Flannery. There we go.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm excited for the Indiana Jones movie. We'll see Harrison Ford in it. Yeah, I think he did a good job in Force Awakens, so we'll see how he takes up the hat.
Well, I think, strangely, Crystal Skull may come up in our conversation later.
Maybe, just a bit.
I was gonna say,
you know, they can't do much worse than Crystal Skull, really, can they? So...
So the next bit of news is kind of interesting. Of course, there's metrics for all these different things, but the Last Jedi trailer has underperformed, receiving only 31 million YouTube views in the first 24 hours. This is compared to The Force Awakens, that received 55 million during the first 24 hours, or to be contrasted with Stephen King's It, that was just released and received 197 million views in the first 24 hours. Now, they do make note in the article I pulled up that the Last Jedi trailer actually received 43 million views in total if you count Facebook views, which may not have played a factor in the Force Awakens trailer. So that brings it a little bit closer. What do you guys think about this? Like, do you think that... I personally thought the trailer was amazing. Obviously, we did our breakdown, and, you know, it is very similar to the first Force Awakens trailer, you know, in timing and everything, but what do you guys think? Do you think it was underperformed? Like, people just aren't excited about it?
No. I mean, it was split so weirdly. So, for example, the first time I watched it, so within the first day, I saw it during the panel when they played it on the panel, and then I watched it one further time on the YouTube account later that day. But also because I was at home with family, I could get away with constantly watching it over and over and over again, which is what I usually do with the Star Wars trailer. But obviously my first lot of views came on the panel live stream because they showed it twice on there. So I feel like a lot of people may have watched it on the panel live stream and then gone back to YouTube later, and basically because this only takes into account the first 24 hours of this, then people who may have gone back to it to watch it later, that doesn't count. So yeah, because of the way that they premiered it, that's very obviously had a huge impact. Whereas the Force Awakens didn't have like a live stream panel beforehand. Everyone was seeing it for the first time as it was.
Mm-hmm. And you knew what time it was supposed to be released. You know, they had announced the exact time, and people were refreshing the webpage to see the Force Awakens trailer. Now, I will say this. They released it over Easter weekend during Star Wars Celebration, which, you know, one, the holiday is kind of interesting that, you know, what it is. But at the same time, the fact that it was also a celebration where a good chunk of people who would probably watch it 2-3 times in that first 24 hours were there experiencing it live broadcast. I just feel like maybe it was a, you know, if they're looking at this as kind of a way to gauge like interest in the film or possible future box office of it, I feel like this might not be the best numbers to go off of. This almost feels like some of the analysts that you hear for different stock companies, like, oh, they're going to be releasing this, and it's like nowhere near, like, you know, it's like there was a guy, you know, I'm a fan of Apple, but there's a guy who is convinced Apple's going to release a television. He's been saying it for years. Still no television. You know, so the same thing here. I feel like, because, you know, Paul Ferrer, who's an analyst for box office box office numbers, was really surprised at how low it was. But I don't think that's indicative of how much it's going to make.
Well, no, I would certainly say not. But I will say that I did hear some meh responses, not from me, certainly, but from other people that I know. And of course, it's those repeat viewings that jack up those numbers. And I can't help but think back to what Danya has said about some of the Rogue One trailers, how some of them were just all explosions and action-packed, and that's the ones that we love over here. And then there's the ones that are much more thoughtful. And I thought this was a much more thoughtful type of trailer, even though you can match it up against The Force Awakens and, you know, you see the parallels. It just seemed to require more thought than just boom, boom, bang, bang.
You know, I'll agree with you 100%. You know, I was at work when it came out. I specifically planned around at the end of the Last Jedi panel. I set a timer to make sure I took my break after the end of it because I knew the trailer would be out. So I got to actually watch it on YouTube. It was the first when I did, I went to Star Wars' channel and I watched it right away there. But it was one of those things where I watched it full screen and everyone's like, ooh, what is that? And they all came to watch. And then we watched it like 3 or 4 times, you know, on 15-minute break. I can only watch it so many times. But instantly, like, I come back, people are like, Mikey, I need to talk to you about this. So what's going on here? Like, asking all these questions. Like, everyone was super excited. But at the same time, it was one of those things where it's not that bang, bang, you know, boom, a lot of explosions, kind of like, it's not a Fast and the Furious style trailer, which, don't get me wrong, I'm a fan of those films
or,
a little bit.
Or a Star Trek 3 trailer.
Yeah, or a Star Trek 3 trailer, or Guardians of the Galaxy style trailer, which has been pretty explosions. But they're all fun, so this trailer was a little bit more, it was meant to set the mystery of it, I think. Just with, like, even taking the line that Luke says at the end, and here, you know, the red screen, like the red logo and everything. I think it was meant to kind of give you a thought, like, ooh, what's really going to happen? And so I'm okay with, you know, the numbers. They don't mean much, but I thought it was an interesting bit of news. Okay. Anything else about the numbers? I don't think it's
going to No, happen. I mean, it's not really anything to be concerned about, I don't think.
Although, I want to know why that many people rewatched the It trailer, because I watched it hearing all these things, like, it's so scary. I'm just like, whatever. Okay.
I didn't even
show me the TV one.
I haven't watched it at all. Like, all of the trailers that are on that list, and, like, 197 million views in the first 24 hours, and I'm like, I haven't even watched it once yet, and also, I don't really want to. Like, that's okay, you guys can keep it.
You don't like clowns? Did Jar Jar scare you too much?
I've Saving nothing against clowns. I just am not... Oh, God. Right, okay, I'll out myself right now. Not a huge fan of Stephen King. Like, in general. So, that's why I'm just not interested in it.
Well, and that book, in and of itself, is kind of... not one that I'm particularly interested in reading, for lots of reasons.
I'm not particularly fond of his style of prose. I'm not particularly fond of his way of writing and structuring plot. And so I've never been a fan of him. I've never seen the appeal. So his stuff being adapted into movies is just not anything that I've ever been interested in. I've read a few of his books, and I'm just like, they're fairly average ways to, like, waste some time, but I would specifically go out of my way to read it. Most of the time when I've ended up reading Stephen King stuff, it's been because it's been assigned to me in a class to have to read, because we were doing essays and stuff on it, and we had critical analysis to do, but I've just never... you know, it's personal taste, but I'm just not a fan.
That's okay. Yeah. But I know you're a fan of the next bit of news we have. So, one of our favorite novels here, Star Wars Lost Stars, is getting a manga adaptation. So...
Okay, I had
this
not
sounds
seen
amazing.
That.
I know. The link is there,
yeah,
so you can take a
thing.
Look at it. So this is a real thing. News came out today, Danya. This is why I stay on top of this stuff. But yeah, so obviously, Lost Stars is one of my new favorite books for, you know, the new canon. And it's really good. Like, I will say, I'm kind of sad that the story kind of ends there and doesn't go further. But we're going to get a manga. So I'm really excited for the artwork that's going to come out of this, because it seems like a perfect novel for them to convert into, you know, this manga book series. It's going to be released, let's see, bi-weekly adaptation of it, drawn by Yosuka Komiyami. The same person who... I'm so bad at names. If you know how to say it.
Komiyama.
There you go. There you go. Who did Avengers Zombies Assemble also. And the first issue of this will be dropped May 4th. So, definitely keep your eyes out online. See if you...
I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's going to be published through Line, their manga app. So Line is a very popular messaging and social media platform predominantly aimed at the Asian market. I use it a little bit, funnily enough, mostly to talk to some of my friends who live out in Japan. And so it's getting published through that. The problem with this is that it is very likely going to be localized Japan-only content. So it may require someone screenshotting and translating it for people.
You'll take care of that for us, right?
I don't need to translate. I can just see the pretty pictures. That's what I care about.
Yeah, so my speaking Japanese is significantly better than my reading comprehension of Japanese. So, yeah, I would be able to translate it if I was listening to it, not so much if I'm reading it. I was very, very bad at the reading and writing aspect, much better at the speaking part.
The artwork they have on this website, it's not very good, but if you click on the original announcement, which is in Japanese that I can't read, there is artwork for it already. That I am a fan of the style. The scene, like Sienna Ray, like it reminds me of that obviously the anime style of the TIE Fighter animation that was out. It's very similar in that and just looks awesome. Like I almost wish they would just animate this, because it would be an awesome story for it.
Well, on the linked article, the part that has me the most simultaneously excited and just confused is the fact that they're apparently going to do that with Heir to the Jedi also. So they get to draw the scene where Luke scoots a noodle. So I guess hooray for that.
I forgot about that.
All the noodle scooters will get to just put that on their screensaver.
Now, Heir to the Jedi is no longer canon, so, you know, it's
isn't it?
I miss some of that.
Heir to the Jedi? The one by Kevin Hearn?
You're right, it is the new one. It's not the other Heir one that was done by Kevin J. Anderson, or I don't remember. There's so many Star EU books.
Yeah, no, there's too many.
Air the Jedi is canon. That one is canon, where he's sitting there eating noodles and he tries to scoop the noodle with telekinesis. Yeah, and he can't do it.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, boy.
No.
But he finds another lightsaber in that book also. Anyway, moving on. Harrison Ford has said it will be weird to watch a young Han Solo movie.
I feel you, Harris Ford.
I'm okay. You know, here's the thing, is I get it might be weird, but at the same time, like, I have high hopes for this, and we'll just see kind of what, you know, comes of it, if you will. I'm not too...
Yeah, I know, you're ever the optimist, particularly about, like,
someone has to
everything
be.
Star Wars, whereas I'm erring on the side of caution because I still don't see that a Han Solo movie is entirely necessary. So.
And yet that's still hilarious, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Solo, it's so solo. Much fun to say, Han Solo movie. Listen, yeah. They haven't really given it a name yet, so until that happens, I'm going to keep either calling it that or the Red Solo Cup.
It's Han Solo at Star's End, right? That's what they're basing it on, I'm pretty sure.
Who knows? But the full quote is, of course I'll be watching it as a fan, but it'll be weird. It'll be a little weird. I've met the fellow who's going to play the younger Han Solo. Wonderful guy, very sweet, and very good actor. So I'm delighted in the choice. He's okay with it. Come on. And they're going to have Chewbacca and Han. Like, how can that go wrong? Plus, they have Lando. Like, it'll be okay. It's going to be fun. It may not be the movie you introduce people to as Star Wars, but it won't be an Ewok movie. How about that? No?
I mean, those were good when we were 2 years old, so.
I know. I like The Last Caravan. I like Ewoks. Well,
as long as we get to see Asana Solo, it might be worth it.
It might, you know. We're going to see a young Lando. That's all that matters to me.
Yeah. Oh, so we know there. what matters to you. I am with you on that one. So Sana Staris or Sana Solo, whatever you want to call her, that is what I'm interested in. But they still haven't confirmed whether or not. She's been cast, and I feel like, considering that she is still part of official canon, that it would be very odd if she wasn't involved in the Han Solo movie at all, considering the time frame that it's supposed to span.
Mm-hmm.
So if Thandi Newton, who was cast, isn't actually playing Sana Staris, then I will be very, very confused about why they're not using her at all, particularly because she is still canon. She hasn't been retconned, she hasn't been moved to legends or anything like that. So,
we'll have to wait and see. Anything else about on Harrison Ford and Han Solo movie?
No, not particularly.
No, don't think so.
Okay. It's pretty like, you know, like I said, it's kind of a slow news week, other than it ruining our, you know, holiday plans. Moving on.
I mean, I was going to say, it's not really unusual that it's a slow news week, considering we're in the direct aftermath of Star Wars Celebration, where we'll probably find that the next couple of weeks are fairly news light, right before May the 4th, then we'll probably get like a ridiculous dump of crazy news on May the 4th, and go back to being quiet again. No doubt.
Yeah, it comes in ebbs and waves. You know, we'll get more, and then I'll stop for a bit. I'm okay with it, though. But I do want to talk about our newest novel that we're going to discuss today. If I will be honest with you, if you have not read Thrawn and you're interested in reading Thrawn and you don't want spoilers, don't listen. If you want to read Thrawn and you're not don't care about spoilers, listen on. If you have completed it, listen on. Our spotlight topic is Thrawn, the novel, which is canon. Thrawn, the character. I am so excited for this because the book was so good. I read it twice. I read it once as a book and once as an audiobook, or listened to it as an audiobook because it was just so good.
All beings begin their lives with hopes and aspirations. Among these aspirations is the desire that there will be a straight path to those goals. It is seldom so. Perhaps never. Sometimes the turns are of one's own volition, as one's thoughts and goals change over time. But more often, the turns are mandated by outside forces.
So, first of all, you guys know my opinions. I love this book. It may become my new favorite canon novel right now. What do you guys think? What did you guys think of this?
I really enjoyed it a lot. So I think I touched on it last week, just a little bit, where I was basically like, the difference between this and the Thrawn novels of what is now Legends is that where the Legends books, so Heir to the Empire, and then like Dark Horse Rising and The Last Command and all of those books, like they had split point of views between multiple characters. So you had Thrawn, but you also spent time with Luke and Leia, and you had like a lot of other characters that, you know, you were dividing your time between. So while you got a really good idea of what Thrawn was about and what he was like and I guess the mindset behind everything that he did and his background in bits and pieces, you didn't really get into his head as much. You really didn't get to explore him as fully as a character. Whereas this book is solely about him. Yes, there are other characters involved and they kind of like, he is like the center of this novel, and everyone else revolves around him. Whereas in the Legends books, it was fairly evenly split across characters. So this was really interesting because it kind of balanced the best of like all of Thrawn's appearances in Legends and condensed it all down into one novel and essentially polished it to the point of being, like, the perfect balance for me. Like, I think it... The problem that I had, as much as I loved Timothy Zahn's, like, Heir to the Empire and just the rest of that series, and I still... It's still... They're still some of my favorite Legends books. The problem that I had sometimes is that Thrawn came across as a very Sherlock Holmes-esque character, but almost wildly intelligently so. Like, to the point where it became almost unbelievable sometimes. Whereas in this book, like, the logic that is used for Thrawn coming to the conclusions that he does was very sound. It wasn't as kind of like jumping through hoops, or patting yourself on the back, aren't we so clever kind of thing. It was mostly like, no, actually, these are just very logical steps. And once he explained them, it made a lot of sense. So I feel like it did a real service to the character in being able to almost ground him a little bit more, because it also really highlighted his flaws as well. And yeah, I just in general is like a piece of character work, essentially. I thought it was great to understand him as a villain and as an adversary. And I think it's a great addition to the Star Wars canon.
Yeah, in the original trilogy that you mentioned, he was really just kind of a really well-thought-out bad guy. You didn't really get a sense of the rest of his life. They made allusions to it, but we weren't given much insight. And we didn't really get any until the Outbound Flight novel, which is kind of, that whole subplot is discarded here, which is fine, because it was kind of weird anyways. But in that one, we at least got to see Thrawn still as a part of the Chiss Ascendancy and interacting with humans. A lot of the similar...
Is that George Seaborth?
Yeah, he was... I'm not even sure how you pronounce it, but...
Yes, or Seaboth, I don't know. But you know who I'm talking about. Like, I haven't read Outbound Flight in a long time, so I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, and Anakin and Obi-Wan actually make an appearance in that book, too. It's a couple years before the Clone Wars start. But in there's a lot of scenes in this book, in the new one, that are kind of paralleled, where he's got this human that he's sort of bouncing off of and learning from. Learning about, in the old books, the Republic, and now bouncing ideas off of Eli. I mean, we can talk about Eli all night about the state of the Empire. I'd buy it.
I would too. Keep going. Sorry, I'm interrupting as you go.
Oh no, you're fine. Believe me, after having done so many episodes of JodoCast, getting interrupted is the least of my worries. But yeah, like, even in... Oh, now I lost my train of thought. Thanks a lot, Mikey. No, I'm joking.
Sorry. Well, that's right. While you think of that, I do have something to say. So, before we get into the novel book, like I said, I'm super excited about this book and I want to talk about it. I do have a bit of information from Timothy Zahn directly. One of our fans actually got to meet Timothy Zahn back in March of this year, and I have been kind of saving this because I knew we were going to do an episode on the book. So I want to say thank you, Kimberly, for emailing me asking for some questions to give to Timothy Zahn. And so he answers them directly to us, and I want to read some of these answers real quick to you guys. The first question I had was, how do you feel about the EU turning into Legends by Disney? And his response was, he said, as well as the other Star Wars writers were concerned, that EU would no longer be canon. And it was actually a relief that they were moved over to the Legends category rather than being completely wiped out. This means there's still hope for many of the characters and storylines. He gave the analogy to say that we are 1,000 years in the future on Coruscant, and the Hall of Records have been completely destroyed in some flood or disaster, and all the records, EU material, is buried. There may be stories still told about Thrawn or other EU characters, but they are stories. They aren't in the history books, and there is no true history. They are not part of the official history, the canon, as it were, of the galaxy. But occasionally, an archivist will be able to restore a file and a character, even in no longer just a story. They are historical records to back it up. So Thrawn is this file that is found, that is unearthed somewhere, and they were able to bring him back into canon. Which I thought was a really cool way for him to put his other works being put out to Legends. What do you guys think of that?
I like that approach a lot. I think... A lot of the time, that's kind of how I've looked at it. Like, everything that's in Legends, they're not invalid stories, but they're more like hearsay, I guess.
Or tall tales, if you will.
Like mythology or fairy tales or something like that. You know, they are set within the same world. They are stories that are based on kernels of truth. But the real truth will then find its way back into canon. And that's the way that I've always viewed them moving the EU content into Legends. And I don't dislike it. I don't dislike that idea at all. I think it's a very clever way of approaching it, and also gives them a lot of leeway to start threading characters back into the story again. Because there are some incredible characters in Legends that they can use, and I absolutely think they should, because it's almost a waste not to use them, because they were so good, and everyone knows the words that are out of my mouth next, so I'm just not going to say it. Everyone knows what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Well, maybe if they did bring her back, she wouldn't die in such a dumb way.
Yeah,
she did die in a pretty dumb way. But that wasn't Timothy Zahn who killed her off.
No,
anyway,
it was not.
So I do want to tell another little story in this. Again, Kimberly, if you're listening to this episode, thank you. Shoot me another email so I can thank you properly in it. But so she has a story that Zahn told her about Thrawn and Rebels. And this was a question I asked about the book coming up, and she was able to ask him. So in November of 2015, Zahn got an email from Lucasfilm, and they would like him to come out to California and chat about Star Wars. He was a bit baffled by the vagueness of the email, and with his schedule, he was unable to go for a few months. He finally had time to clear his schedule in January, and he emailed back that he would be able to come. He received a reply that he was scheduled for a two-hour meeting, but that he was not to tell anyone that he was meeting with Lucasfilm or what the meeting would be about. NDAs all around. At this point, he was very curious, as a two-hour secretive meeting, a Lucasfilm meeting, is not normal activity for writers. He went down to the meeting and was led into a room that included about 10 Star Wars bigwigs, including some of the production team from Rebels. They showed him the artwork and discussed the storyline, the effect of bringing a Legends character back into canon would have. This was in many ways a courtesy meeting, as Disney was informing him they were going to use his character. They have creative control after all. The writer of Rebels would be writing everything Zahn had real no say in it, and that he is not writing for the show, though he is effectively a creative consult should they wish to contact him about something. The other purpose of the meeting was to ask Zahn to write another book. Lucasfilm was working on Rogue One and Rebels and wanted a tie-in book that would line up Thrawn's history with the new canon. This book is now called Thrawn, and obviously was just released. Timothy Zahn was unable to tell anyone about this book and that while he was working on it, or that he's been given a go-ahead from Disney to write another book about Thrawn, until after the Season 3 trailer for Rebels that showed Thrawn in it. And since then, he was able to announce it. He said it seemed kind of strange to be able to have to work within their timeline, but that writing about Thrawn felt like just normal. So I thought that was pretty cool that he didn't know they were even going to bring him into Rebels, but they did want to like courtesy tell him about it. And then they asked him to write the book. So what you guys think about that? Like,
well, we were actually talking about that in my household, about, you know, what sort of control he would have had over their use of him. And I was like, well, it's the same that a lot of comic book writers and artists have to deal with, where their creations are owned by the parent company. But from all reports, especially this one, it sounds like they at least, you know, were considerate of him, saying, hey, we're using your guy. And the fact that they didn't even shy away from asking him to write the book linking the timelines, I mean, that's fantastic. I was afraid the story was going to end with, and he said that, you know, they could only do it if he was allowed to write a book, you know, but this sounds like a much happier ending.
Yeah, no, he goes on to a lot more things, and he talks about Mara Jade in the email, which we won't talk about today because this doesn't really apply to Thrawn. Danya, you have a copy of this email too.
I do.
Yeah, but it's one of those things where it was just kind of nice to hear from, you know, Zahn himself that, you know, going into this book, it was something that it was kind of like coming back home, if you will, kind of the Chewie were home. If, you know, back to this, because, you know, Thrawn was such a big part of the EU. He was a fan favorite. Obviously, when he came back in Rebels, people were ecstatic because of who he was. So this gets kind of sets the stage for the Thrawn novel, if you will. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. But, Danya, anything about kind of what we learned about Timothy Zahn going into writing this? Because he had to fit Thrawn's rise to Grand Admiral in such a short period of time. He did say it felt a little rushed. But what do you guys think about, you know, Timothy Zahn writing this book?
I love that it was him. Because, you know, Heir to the Empire was such a classic, and it's so iconic, and it's so intrinsically linked to him that having him come back to do it, I feel like, is not only a testament to character that he created, but also just how beloved that he is as well, and how much he loves Star Wars and this character too. And I really love that he's basically been continually involved in that creative process, because Thrawn is very much his, as much as Disney and Lucasfilm like own it and own that, it's very much almost like his baby, I guess. So it's really heartening to see him continue to be involved, and I'm glad that he got the opportunity to write this book. And as much as maybe he thinks that it was rushed, it certainly didn't come across that way at all in the novel itself. Like, I think that it was paced incredibly well. The tension was, like, great throughout. And I think, like, from start to finish, it just had a really snappy, easy pace to it that I really quite enjoyed. And honestly, I think I enjoy this more than the Empire trilogy.
I agree. This book is done really well. I think the tie-in to Rebels also makes me like it that much more, too.
And it's just such a different type of story that's being told. Pretty frequently, when they have these character-specific books, they spend maybe 60, maybe even 55% of the time on that title character, and then you got somebody else that you're not really there for. But with this one, we got at least probably 75% him, and then we got other interesting characters. I just loved all the characters in here, even the ones that we were supposed to hate. Like, I hated them, but I hated them passionately.
You know, and it's interesting because I really like that it brought up, like, Arinda Price, who is the governor of Lothal. And, you know, it had, let's see, Commander Constantine, who eventually, you know, at the end of season 3, screws up, you know, did not listen to Thrawn. And guess what? That's how the rebels were able to escape, because of his bonehead move. Like, it had these other people that you see in Rebels and his early interactions with them, which was really, you know, I really enjoyed it overall. So we'll get to that. But one thing that stood out to me, this book, as we kind of get into, you know, as we go through the novel as a whole, every single chapter started off with Thrawn doing an internal monologue, which I thought to be really interesting. Like, it was kind of, you know, the first time I read through it once, and it kind of took me, I'm like, okay, this makes sense. But it was, I found it interesting, like, this, have this internal monologue. When I listened to it as an audiobook, and you guys got heard a small snippet of it earlier when I played it, the internal monologue was just so well done, especially if you heard it in the voice of Thrawn, that it gave me chills every time a chapter would start when I was listening to it, because you just hear the ruthlessness and the cold, calculating voice of him. You know, and to me, it just was like the perfect way to set up each and every chapter, because the way that internal monologue ended each, you know, at the beginning of each chapter, it gave you like an overarching kind of theme to see how that chapter played out. What do you guys think of that specific style to this book?
I liked it. Predominantly, I was reading it like just as the novel. I have very weird opinions on audiobooks in general. We discussed it a little bit in the pre-show that I don't always enjoy them, so I tend to, and also I get through books a lot. I'm a speed reader, so I can get through books really, really quickly just reading traditionally. So I tend to gravitate to that quite a lot. Like, if I have the time to be able to sit down and blitz through it, I can read through a book within a couple of hours. Probably less than that. So reading it, I still think that it worked and was fairly effective, because opening each one on that monologue gave a really deep insight into the character and his thought process, and I think that was a great way of being able to understand him as a character, his motivations, his sort of just thought process, the way that he thinks, the way that he just ticks. And it was just such a good way of approaching it. Personally, I liked it a lot.
Yeah, I liked it a lot too. I agree with you on the audiobook part. And like we had talked about, there are some audiobook readers who do make it worthwhile. And from the snippet that we heard of this one, it sounds like this might very well be worthwhile. It was really nice to have sort of a flavor for each chapter also. And it sort of helped you as the reader get into his headspace a bit as you're seeing him go through the motions, you know, that are described in the chapter.
Yeah, to me, it was one of those things where it really, you know, you don't get a lot of it. You know, it's, to me, it was less than a page on for every chapter. So, you know, it's a good 2 or 3 paragraphs, but nothing significant, but just enough to kind of to really put the chapter and the specific section that we're going to read, or the story where you're going to, you know, read up about, you know, in very specific perspective from his mind. And then obviously when I talked about the audiobook, it really put it in a very specific, you know, just hearing it in his voice gave me chills. And I think that made it that much better. So going from the novel real quick, and this is spoilers now, even from the very beginning, we learned that Thrawn was exiled to a planet. But this is a ruse from the very beginning that we find out later in the novel. Did either of you think that it was a ruse that he was exiled, or until it was revealed?
I was lulled into a false sense of security with that. I should have realized that, because we were learning about Thrawn all the way through, and that he has a very specific end game, and it's very much like playing chess. He's always thinking several steps ahead. That mm-hmm. there must have been something more to it. But because I had read the Heir to the Empire books previously, and the other stories and short stories that had Thrawn in it, I knew about the exile, and so I just took it at face value, because I figured that was just something that they were carrying across from Legends, because it was something that had been previously established, like he had been exiled in the EU as well. So I just didn't think more on it, because I was like, oh, they're just doing that, they're bringing that back.
Yeah, Zahn's cool. He totally suckered us in with that one.
Oh,
yeah,
totally
he did. It was very clever. Very, very clever, because I wasn't expecting it. And I actually really like this variation on it a lot more, because it makes a lot of sense about why he'd be involved with the Empire specifically, considering the Empire's thoughts on alien species and just their approach to a lot of stuff, and I guess the protection of his own race, like that, it makes so much more sense now why he'd be involved with the Empire.
I'm gonna jump ahead based on what you just said. So Thrawn has a nemesis, if you will, in this novel called Night Swan. And he poses to Night Swan a question. Let's say you have, you know, and I don't remember the exact wording, so if I butcher this, I'm sorry, but hopefully I get the gist across. He poses to Night Swan a question. What if you have a mutual enemy, or you have an evil or a beast, and you have, and you're there, you know, an enemy is with you, or I guess a foe is what he said, because it's not an enemy, but a foe is you're with a foe, and then you have a mutual enemy. What options do you have? You know, do you destroy your foe in the hopes that the new enemy will go ahead and take him and you can escape? or do you join up so you can team up and go against it? And that really is interesting because that's what he talks about with the Chiss Ascendancy, because there's some unknown evil in the unknown region, which I'm in my mind, I'm like, is this Snoke he's talking about that we're not learning? You know, all these different things, because this is now canon. So this unknown, you know, entity in the unknown regions, did this cross your guys' mind? Like, what could it be? Your thought, you know, anything with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think if we were still back in Legends, we'd be going, ooh, that's a Yuuzhan Vong foreshadowing.
We're all there.
Yeah.
It's the Vong. You know, like, but it's not Legends, and Vong have been taken out completely.
So after I call myself down from there, no, they won't. I was like, oh, yeah, it's probably Snoke.
Maybe, well, see, I don't know. Is it Snoke or is it like...
It may be someone related to Snoke. So it could even be...
The true Sith Empire.
Could it be Vong? Like, here's where... Now, this is pure speculation and going off topic. So the old concept for the Death Star and the military buildup of the Emperor, of the Empire, was that Darth Sidious, you know, Emperor Palpatine, had a vision of the Yuuzhan Vong invasion. And that's what forced him to militarize and build up, you know, build the Death Stars and stuff so that they can be strong enough to defeat the Yuuzhan Vong invasion. Like, that was Emperor Palpatine's, like, excuse. Like, that was his driving force to do what he did. Could you think this be, like, planting a seed for that type of thing to carry on past episode 9 as a movie series of, you know, this type of invasion? Do you guys think that's even a possibility, or you think they're not going to go that down that road? Because they've brought a lot of other things back from canon, and the New Jedi Order is one of the more popular EU book series, which I've even recommended people read. Do you guys think the introduction of the Vong or anything that came in that era could be coming back possibly, and this be the early planting of seeds?
I'm going to call a hard no on that one, but, you know, I think post-Return of Jedi is just completely up in the air, but I don't think they're going to take much of anything from post-Jedi Legends. I mean, the one thing that I said they could have pulled would have been to reveal Kylo Ren's name to have been Jason, and they didn't even do that. So I don't see them pulling anything else from post-Jedi Legends.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. No. I mean, I can see them using some characters or using some aspects of characters that they remold into newer ones that fit better within their canon. Like, for example, I could feasibly see them using Mara Jade, but I don't think... if they did use Mara Jade, I don't think it would be the one that we're entirely familiar with from Legends, for example. Like, I think that they would change her role slightly and, I guess, not have her as closely linked to Luke's story. But I feel like there's so much potential for her just as a character in her own right, where she isn't basically just...
Luke's wife.
Essentially. So she's not, like, secondary to Luke to kind of further that storyline. I feel like there's enough character strength and traits in her for her to have her own stories that would be incredibly interesting and things that I would be really eager to read about. But whether they do it or not, I don't know. I just think that it would be really cool. And I would love to see them do it, but, you know, there are ways they probably could bring things back in. But, yeah, I don't know. It would be, yeah, very interesting, I think.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see what happens. But going through, obviously, the novel, we find out that Thrawn was... aka Exile, which he really wasn't, and he gets taken aboard and taken directly to the Emperor, which I found to be kind of interesting, that this exiled, this alien on a planet that was just hunting for pirates and spies would find somebody and take him all the way to the Emperor. Now, he is a Chiss, and he admits that he's a Chiss, and there are rumors and legends about this type of species that had, you know, formidable military power and stuff like that. So I guess it makes sense to go to the Emperor, but did you guys find that at all interesting or taken out of character at all?
I wouldn't say it's taken out of character, mostly because we know that Palpatine has some interest in that sort of area of space, so having someone who's come from there who can provide insight into it is something that he'd be personally interested in, so I don't necessarily think that it's out of character.
It did strike me as a little odd that, you know, there was really not any intermediary to get to there, to get to the Emperor, just like, oh, here you go, let's go see the Emperor.
Yeah, I kind of almost would have hoped to see an appearance of, like, Mos Amita or somebody else who would have played this intermediary for him. But obviously it was directly the Emperor, which, you know, you see it later on when before the Emperor gives him the Grand Admiral, insignia and stuff, that, you know, there was a kind of a testing of wills between Thrawn and the Emperor, which was really interesting. So I was okay with it in the end, but at the beginning I was kind of like, took him all the way to the Emperor, that's interesting. And then, of course, they threw him into the Academy to do a crash course in 3 months, and during this time he was befriended, or forced to be befriended, by a translator, Ensign Eli Vanto, who I do want to spend some time talking about. But during this time, you know, you see a lot of different things that happened while he was at the Academy and through the rest of his career. He is an alien in a predominantly human military, the Empire, and he has to deal with it. And we saw this from the very beginning where, you know, you see some of his tactical mastermind. I think one of my favorite scenes is when he goes to play cards with Eli, and I don't remember the name of the other character, the kid, and they, it was obviously planned that they tried to stage and have Thrawn, you know, be caught playing cards, which is illegal, you know, for a cadet to do something like that. But Thrawn had also been given the rank of lieutenant while going through the Academy. And he planned it perfectly to put on the lieutenant, insignia right as he would have been called out by the teacher. What do you guys think of that, like, just that little scene right there?
I think it's also one of my favorites.
Yeah, I was going to say it speaks very much to Thrawn being very much aware of the situation that he's stepping into, because it's no secret that the Empire has no love for alien species. So in order to protect himself, he always has to be multiple steps ahead of everyone. So he needs to know ways to protect himself from, well, any kind of movements that people would make against him, to undermine him, to get him cast out, to just invalidate any and everything that he does in order for them to rise above him. And so I think that it spoke very much to this idea that when you are at a significant disadvantage, and it's so interesting, just the idea of race politics in Star Wars specifically, or in this case, species politics, that when you are at that disadvantage and when life is basically putting you at the lowest possible point and everything is against you, you have to fight against everything that's institutionalized that is pushing you down. And it's not easy, but it speaks so much to just Thrawn in general about how good he is at that and being able to subvert that institutionalized racism, basically.
And it never seemed to, like, bother him. It never got to him, even though Eli was constantly telling him, like, they don't really like aliens. That's not, like, the official stance, but just so you know. And he's just like, yeah. Why? Okay, fine.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it also is very interesting because Thrawn is very much acting in the interests of himself and his own species. So
through the whole
Empire,
thing.
The Empire is a means to an end for him. Essentially, he's basically choosing the what he perceives as the strongest starting point in order to protect his species. So, yeah, it's just very interesting that he basically just continues to solidify his position without really rising to what anyone expects of him in his reaction to how they treat him as a species, an alien species. So, he has his flaws, of course, as a character, but that is something that he never really lets them use as having something over him, I guess.
Okay. No, I'll agree with you. Like, I think I pulled up that specific section of the book right now. Going into just, he loves to go into theory specifically of, you know, there's nothing unbeatable. You know, and mutual destruction is not something that you'd want to do. Ideally, you'd want to go somewhere else. So it's definitely Thrawn as what we know of Thrawn from the other novels, from Rebels, from everything. It's such a good story. So I do want to move off of Thrawn for a minute, and let's talk about some of the other characters that were introduced in the novel. We learn about Yorinda Price, who was part of Price Mining on Lothal, and then was kicked off of her own planet because of corruption of the governor of Lothal at the time, before she becomes governor. And, you know, we kind of see her struggles throughout the Thrawn book, her rise to power to become governor of Lothal. God, I keep wanting to say Thrawn instead of Lothal. Of her becoming governor of Lothal, which we see as a character in season one of Rebels. So, what do you guys think of seeing about Price's rise and fall, kind of, or I guess it's only her rise in the book, where she came from on Lothal to going to Coruscant, and then trying to save her parents off of another planet, and then back to Lothal. What do you guys think?
Like I said before, as far as secondary spotlight characters go, this was really well done. When the first section of hers showed up, I was kind of scratching my head like, okay, I understand who this character is, but why do we need her here? And I think we were well rewarded, actually. Her story was all the more
really
suspenseful,
good.
I thought, yeah, than Thrawn's, because you know Thrawn's going to win. You know he's going to win. But, you know, seeing what she had to go through was possibly more interesting.
Yeah, I found it interesting because she was a character who, she was wronged by the Empire early on through corruption, right? You know, she was, you know, her mind found a source of Dunium, which is going to go ahead, be mined and sold and all these things, but the governor wanted to buy percentage of it and take over and basically take all the money for himself. And the way for her to kind of cut out or stick it to that governor, if you will, was to sign it over to the Empire. You know, make it as an Empire own mine. And they were able to do things like move her to an office on Coruscant, so she got off the planet, and her goals were to aspire and move up and kind of come back to Lothal, and gave her parents a position, you know, running a mine elsewhere. Like, her story was really well done. It also kind of gave me a glimmer of what we see on Lothal in Rebels. You know, seeing how kind of vindictive she became at the very end, which I won't get into all the small details, but kind of made me understand why Ezra and the crew of the Ghost want to free Lothal so significantly because of the ruling governor of Price herself. Danya, what do you think of Price's story in this?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it really fleshed out the character a lot more. It made a lot of her movements within Rebels a lot more interesting, and it's going to be really cool to go back and rewatch Rebels with the Thrawn novel in mind now, because it adds so much to the character that's sort of underlying in the performance that you see in Rebels is so cleverly done, because obviously this comes after the fact. You know, we've had Price in Rebels for a while, so the way that Timothy Zahn was able to expand on that and give her a more nuanced motive and a far more interesting backstory within the confines of like what Rebels has already shown us is just so incredibly clever. And particularly then as well, what we get in the Thrawn novel, like you said, makes this idea of wanting to oust her from Lothal and free Lothal and basically the actual kind of the opposition to Price completely is now far more interesting again. So it just, I love that without like very hard-handed in connecting the two together, it did it so neatly and cleverly that it enhanced both properties. So Rebels feeds very nicely into Thrawn novels, and then there's a cycle. Thrawn feeds back really nicely, and the Thrawn novel feeds back really nicely into Rebels as a series. So I really do want to go back, and I have started watching it again season one recently, so it's going to be a far more interesting experience now that I've finished reading the Thrawn novel, watching the remainder of Rebels.
Yeah, I will say the tie between Price and Thrawn was really interesting, just because throughout the entire novel, you see that Thrawn is kind of inept to politics. He's not, you know, or maybe he's feigning ignorance of it all. But at one point specifically, Price makes a deal with Thrawn to help his aide, Ensign Eli Vanto, get his promotion, because he should have been promoted a long time before, and get his ship, Thrawn's ship, get repaired sooner rather than later at the end of the repair line, if you will. So it was really nice to see them work together, and then obviously in Rebels they come back together later on. You kind of realize that it was not a first time meeting, but a reunion. But this leads us directly to another character that was introduced in the Thrawn novel that we know from Clone Wars and Rebels, Colonel Yularen, Wolof Yularen, if you will, from the ISB. It was interesting that Yularen was an early supporter of Thrawn. Like, it doesn't really surprise me, because Yularen doesn't sound like a someone who would hold Thrawn's alien, you know, this to him for any reason. And it was, I also found it interesting that Thrawn mentioned knowing Anakin Skywalker, and you know Yularen worked with Anakin Skywalker and General Kenobi in the Clone Wars also. What do you guys think of Yularen as a character in this and his ties to Thrawn?
It made the relationship between them in Rebels in through Imperial eyes make so much more sense.
Yeah, for
because
sure.
Because we already got a sense that there was a very close and long-standing relationship between the two, and a very deep and unwavering respect between them as well for each other, and also a huge amount of trust, considering that Thrawn kind of confided very easily with Yularen that he didn't believe that Fulcrum was who they had caught. And if Thrawn hadn't wholeheartedly and without reservation trusted Yularen, he would never have said that. So there was already that seed in Rebels itself that there was more to that relationship. The fact that so close on the heels of that Rebel episode, we now get the Thrawn novel, which introduces the beginnings of that relationship, the strength of it, the support that Yularen gave Thrawn, was great, because it now, like, similarly, it feeds into each other and it explains it so much more. And it just strengthens both storylines so much, because it just continues to build off things that have been introduced that are very subtle, but you know that there's more to the story than that. And now the Thrawn novel has expanded on it, and you're like, oh, that's so satisfying.
And it's also really interesting, given that in the new canon, they are friends and, you know, have a lot of respect for each other. Both of them, it seems like they stick out from the rest of the Imperials because they are not horrible people. They're not mustache-twirling villains. And they're just not vindictive. They're just both really good at their jobs.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, this makes me wonder, Danya. Thrawn is obviously a Grand Admiral of the Imperial Navy, who is a villain. But in this one, we're designed, you know, in the novel, we're designed to love Thrawn for his cold mastermind and everything. Last week you mentioned with Inferno Squad, you were kind of nervous about seeing how it is because you don't want to normalize what the Empire did. But when you look at this novel, Thrawn did everything for peace and justice in the sense, you know, he did not kill lives for the sake of killing lives. Even his nemesis that I want to talk about next was Night Swan, but obviously he was part of a corrupt government. What do you think about Yularen and Thrawn in this kind of setting?
I think that it's a very interesting approach. I appreciate perspective, but I still didn't find myself rooting for either one of them to succeed because of who they were working for. So I never found myself throughout it wanting them to defeat their enemies because I knew that the ultimate goal of that was, I guess, repression and prejudice. And you see it even within like how people treat Thrawn and other alien species. Like, there's so much discrimination there and a superiority within the organization itself, and it's so corrupt that it doesn't matter who you are within that organization. If you are continuing to work with them and with their ideals and furthering that agenda, you are as complicit as the people who are at their worst within that organization and government. Bottom line. So it doesn't matter what your intent is if the end result is exactly the same.
Yep,
you know, it's that you. It's that idea of cool motive, still murder from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. It really doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You know, for me, I feel like there's no leeway in that. You know, I can genuinely enjoy the perspective of seeing where Thrawn is coming from, his thought processes and how he approaches things, and I can appreciate it, but at the same time, I can detach myself from the fact and still realize that at the end of the day, he is still a villain. I still don't agree with what he is doing. I still don't agree with what the Empire is doing, and I still don't want to see any of them succeed. So, you know, it's a slightly different approach for me than it is with the idea of playing as the Inferno Squad in Battlefront, because I am not forced to have to live through what Thrawn is doing. I am not forced to have to play that out and be the one executing all of that stuff. I can detach myself from it in a way where I can read about it like I would read about, for example, the history of World War II. And I can read that and see what happened and look at it like almost from like a factual manner. And I can understand it and understand what happened and catalog it. And the idea is that you learn from that in order to ensure that that is not repeated in the future. That is how you learn from your history and not repeat it in the future. Whereas the issue that I have with the story mode in Battlefront is that you are forced into that perspective and have to play through with the end goal of wanting them to succeed. That is my problem with the story mode in Battlefront, is that you are essentially being forced to be that person when it may go entirely against your ideals. Like, the idea of reading it as a novel versus having to play and live through it, that is a very distinctly different experience for me. And that's why I feel so strongly about the idea of having to play through as Inferno Squad in Battlefront 2.
No, I'll agree with you on that. Like, the idea of reading Empire characters and kind of not necessarily rooting along with them, but enjoying their story, I agree, is different than playing as the character and kind of performing those acts, if you will.
Yeah.
But moving on to, I guess, Hero of the Rebellion, which it's interesting that he even talked about joining all the rebel forces together. Night Swan, who was the foil of Thrawn in this novel. I found Night Swan to be an interesting character because it kind of just kept coming up all over the place that obviously Thrawn was at. He kind of had this infatuation with who the name of Night Swan is. And I feel like Night Swan was even playing with Thrawn at certain points in time, like leading him on a goose chase sometimes just to see what Thrawn would do. Like they were studying each other in a way. What do you guys think of this character?
I will let Evan take it.
Oh, well, thank you.
I feel like I'm talking a lot.
Well, you are one of the hosts. That's like your job.
I feel like I'm doing the same thing. I'm like, guys, talk too. Yeah.
So Night Swan was a character that I really enjoyed by the end. Like at first, it was just like, oh, okay, so it's just some bad guy with a cool name, sure. But then you get towards the end, and I did read almost the entire book in one sitting yesterday. So, yeah, it was really good, and I wanted to see more of him further on. We probably won't, but I would definitely like to. And one of the things that I do when I'm reading is that I cast people into the roles, so I have a very visual representation of them, because I didn't get a lot of detail on what he was supposed to look like, and I cast Robert Carlyle from Once Upon a Time in Trainspotting in there, and that made it all the more, like, interesting. Like, I want to see more of this guy.
I'll take that. The thing with Night Swan for me, like, the best part about it was, like, at the end, when you kind of reveal that he kind of has been working with all these rebel groups, I wanted him to be someone that would be tied into something else. Like, I wanted him to survive. Now, officially, he's supposedly dead. But I wanted him to turn into, like, a General Dodonna or, a Cassian Andor or somebody who does eventually work with more of the rebel groups that are united not by him but by Mon Mothma. So I kind of wanted it to, Night Swan as the code name to evolve into something else. You know, like I would have loved to see they use code name Night Swan in Rebels and reveal that it's Cassian Andor and K2SO. Like I would have like loved to have something like that, but alas, it didn't happen. Like by the time I learned it, I was like, oh my gosh, please be! And then they killed him off during the price start part of the story, which made me kind of sad. But, I thought he was an interesting character because it was just kind of a counter to, Eli Vanto, who I want to talk about next, and our last character for the novel I want to focus on for this spotlight topic was Night Swan was someone that Eli would be like, was it Night Swan again? Like, you can see, like, used the expressions that I felt when I read more about Night Swan. Like, it was a mystery to me, and I wanted to know more about it. Like part of the book, it was just really fun to hear this someone else was planting these things and even doing stuff possibly on purpose because he knew Thrawn would go ahead and stop it. Specifically, doing something that he had done previously with the planet where they were doing spice, which is essentially a drug in the Star Wars universe, and he wanted Thrawn to stop it, but he couldn't do it himself. So he did something that Thrawn would be able to spot and come running and do. Which I thought was kind of cool. No? Yeah.
Turned on you.
Night Swan?
Yeah, no.
Nothing about Night Swan? It's okay.
No, I agree. Like, I feel like you guys covered it enough for me, but yeah, okay. No.
What about Eli Vanto, Danya? Tell me about Ensign Eli Vanto, who took forever to get his promotion and really just wanted to be on a ship and manage the manifest and not get stuck doing Thrawn's dirty work, even though he doesn't think Thrawn actually needs a translator. What do you think about Eli Vanto?
I quite enjoyed him, mostly because it was a really interesting foil. Not don't know if foil is the right word necessarily, but
a Watson to his Sherlock, if you will.
Almost, yeah, but kind of it's really interesting to see how Thrawn advanced so much faster as someone who had all of the odds stacked against him, whereas Eli Vanto is essentially another human male who is almost the ideal of the Galactic Empire. So it's just interesting where one advanced and the other it took far longer to advance. Like, I just found that very, very, very interesting to me. And also that eventually he is sent back to the Chiss Ascendancy as an ally. Like, so he gets moved out of the Empire and back to the Chiss, which is just, like, for me, it was just, like, thoroughly interesting, like, his journey through the entire book. Yeah. Because it's almost the complete opposite of Thrawn's. Like, Thrawn moved from Chiss through the Empire and moved up through the ranks of the Empire, and then Eli Vanto has basically gone the other way. He is promoted eventually, but then he's sent by Thrawn to the Chiss Ascendancy as an ally. So just, like, the fact that they essentially move in opposite directions by the end of the novel was, like, very interesting to me.
Well, yeah, it was his direct, you know, evolution and growth as a character, too. You know, when he started out, like I said, he just wanted to be, you know, someone who would work with supplies and, you know, a shipping person, you know, a shipping, you know, work with a shipping manifest on a big ship or at a base or something and make lieutenant. Instead, he got stuck as this aide to, you know, this alien who doesn't understand politics and stuff and who is getting promoted after promotion. And because they can't take it out on him, and can't take it out on Thrawn, they do it by taking it out on Eli, and he is stuck as an ensign for well over the customary time. You know, multiple years, or 18 months or something like that, he's left as an ensign when typically you get promoted after, you know, 6 months to a year. And by that time, you know, Thrawn is a captain. You know, he's been moved up so many times. So you can see kind of the jealousy, but at the same time, he even admits that he's not even really that mad because he's learning so much from Thrawn. And Thrawn even admits that at first he kept Vanto close because he thought he was a plant by the Emperor himself. But it turns out he wasn't, and he grew to trust him and kind of want to train him in, you know, tactics in general, which is, I thought, pretty cool. And like you said, at the end, he moved to leave the Empire where he was trying, you know, Eli was trying to move up the ranks also along with Thrawn, but he ended up leaving the Empire to help the Chiss Ascendancy, which remains to be seen if he is any of help, but Thrawn said he should be able to help them. And I thought that was really cool. Like I said, I think me and Evan, like, I'd read a Vanto book on Eli directly. Like, I think that's a really cool, like, exciting story that could be out there. Evan, what do you think about Vanto going through this?
I was going to say I have two major takeaways from him, but really now I've got three. So because he is sent by Thrawn back to the Ascendancy, that means that we're going to get more with them. I mean, this is the tip of the iceberg with the Chiss in the new canon. So there's going to be more, and he's going to be there. He's going to be our keystone, our cornerstone for getting into that new story, whatever that is. And that's really exciting to me. It also makes me wonder if Thrawn's loyalty, well, we know his loyalties to the Empire are a little tenuous based on his solid loyalties to the Ascendancy, but I wonder if, you know, he might be perhaps even more willing to go against the Empire later on. But I think that's just hoping that he'll be, you know, a redeemable hero at the end. The second thing is that I really want to know if Vanto was created to be the canon version of Gilead Paleon, who himself became an amazing character after having served under Thrawn. Point three is, military ranks in Star Wars drive me insane, because they can never seem to keep it straight or make sense. Like, these are Army ranks, these are Navy ranks, and they're just sort of jumping all over the place. I'm like, would you stop? Just, there's a real world version for you to go off of. Stop trying to make things weird. Yeah. But that's just me. That's because that's something that I've had to learn, is military ranks. So it's like a doctor watching House or ER.
You know, it's interesting that you mention Vanto being Pelion, which obviously is EU. Because don't get me wrong, I love Pelion, especially from the later novels and everything. But I also brought up, could Vanto be similar to Jagged Fel, who also went to go join the Chiss? And later came back to kind of bridge the Chiss ascendancy with the remnants of the Empire and later New Republic. Heck, Jagged Phil ended up marrying Jaina Solo. So, you know, it's one of those things where this really opens up, Vanto as a character opens up so many possibilities to me in like future stories, which honestly, I think if I take away anything from this book was that Vanto is a new character that I really want to know more about. More than even Thrawn himself, I think.
I agree. Like I said, I'd buy that book.
I would as well. I think it would be really interesting, especially as like an insight to Chiss just general as well, particularly outside of the EU and Legends. And the fact that he could be almost a reimagining, I guess, of Jagged Fel, who was a character that I really thoroughly enjoyed anyway. So, I don't know. I think that would be really interesting to see that explored a lot more. And I would, I could see actually Timothy Zahn doing something really cool with it if they wanted to get him back for another novel.
Yeah, I think the Star Wars Story Group bringing Thrawn, the Thrawn novel out, and having Zahn do it himself, it's such a good book. If you haven't read it, make sure you check it out. I can't say enough good things about it. Like I said, it's probably become one of my new favorite canon novels right now. There's so many characters. Like, I can literally go chapter by chapter and break it down, because I kind of want to. It's that good. But it's one of those things where I think Vanto, Yularen, Price, Nicewan were a very perfect complement to these characters. And in the end, you see Vanto go join the Chiss, like we talked about. Any other thoughts on the Thrawn book before we close out, guys?
For me, it's the only one of the new books that I've purchased in paper, and I'm so glad. Like, I've gotten all the other... I haven't even gotten all of them, but the ones that I've purchased were ebooks, and that's fine. But this one needed to be paper, and I'm so very happy that I have it. And I cannot wait to see Timothy Zahn at Indie PopCon.
I know, I'm so excited as well. I'm so excited about that.
I might be able to go still, maybe.
We're not getting into that again, Mike.
Leslie said I can go again. She made a call. I told her that. She's like, no, you can go. We'll see how it goes.
Donnie and I have this covered, yeah. Mikey. We're good.
But it's
going to be so cool, though, because I was supposed to sit down with him at New York Comic Con in October, but basically what happened is I was going to the Marvel press rooms and they changed the time, and it overlapped with the only time that we had free to sit down with each other, so I ended up having to skip out on him because I had to go into the Marvel stuff instead. Which was really sad. So it'll be nice to actually meet him at Indie PopCon, especially because I've had a couple of emails back and forth with his agent, and his agent is really lovely. So, yeah. That'll be quite cool, I think.
I did briefly talk with Kevin J. Anderson at Indiana Comic Con. He didn't really want to talk about Star Wars.
Oh, God.
Aww. The Young Jedi Knight series? Come on, I have all 14 of those novels.
Yeah, he wanted to talk about Dune, which I was happy to do also.
Yeah, that, I get it.
But Star Wars, okay. All right, well, thank you all for listening to another episode of Resistance Radio. Feel free to reach out to us on Twitter at @RRadioPodcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. Remember to visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/ResistanceRadioPodcast. And as always, my name is Mikey B.
I'm Danya.
I'm Evan.
Why did I put name in there? Anyway, may the force be with you.
And also with you.